Welcome to Right Beside You, a Reed Health podcast. I'm your host, Prakash Chandran. Today, we'll be talking about anterior and posterior hip replacements with Dr. James Nuttall and Dr. Joel McClurg, orthopedic surgeons for Reed Health. First of all, thank you both so much for joining me today. Dr. Nuttall, I thought that we could start with you. I'd love for you to give us a brief history on the two hip replacement approaches, that's anterior versus posterior, and how they may have evolved in the last couple decades.
Thanks, Prakash, and thank you very much for having me. So, hip replacements have been around at this point for quite a while. They were originally developed in the middle of the last century as experimental surgeries and then progressed to their current level of popularity with huge growth through the 80s and 90s. I'd like to start by just saying what we mean by approach and what the distinction we're talking about today is. Approach is something orthopedic surgeons use as a way to describe how we get from the skin down to the level of the bone and joint where we need to do the work of a hip replacement. The approaches, as we talk about them, are often described in terms of what muscles and nerve intervals you use to get between in order to get to the area that we need to do. In the first iteration of hip replacements, these were actually done in a very invasive way by detaching a part of the bone that where the muscles from your buttocks would come and attach to the hip, and that was called the direct lateral approach. That approach has really fallen out of fashion because it was very invasive and involved cutting the bone. But that left us with the problem of how we get around that pointy part that you can feel on the outside of your hip to get down to the actual hip joint capsule. There were two main schools of thought. One was going around the back of the bone, which eventually developed into the posterior approach, or going around the front of the bone, which started out as something called the anterolateral approach, but now has matured to the direct anterior approach. The difference between these approaches is that though they were used interchangeably initially, the use of the posterior approach was really popularized in the U.S. and became the predominant approach through about the mid-80s. At some point during that development, someone looked at going through the back versus going through the front and had some bright ideas about going through the front in a slightly different way than was done traditionally in order to preserve as much of the muscle attachment to get down to the hip joint capsule as possible. But as we'll talk about as this goes on, that came with some additional complications.
Right. So that's a great explanation of kind of where we've been and where we're at today.
So Dr. McClurg, I suppose expanding on it just a little bit, I'd love for you to talk about the differentiating factors of these two approaches. You know, Dr. Nuttall started to kind of go into it a little bit, but maybe expand on it.
Yeah, so it's just a matter of, you know, what muscles you're going to have to manipulate to get to where you want to go. So, you know, over the top of the hip joint, there's the skin and the musculature. And there are some nerves also to sort of be aware of as you're making your way into the hip joint. And it really is just the interval and what muscle that you want to deal with. And so we really try in the anterior approach specifically, it's really a splitting or division between muscles to get to the hip joint itself so that we can do our work. In the posterior approach, we split the large anterior muscle just like an opening a curtain. And there are some short muscles at the back called the short external rotators that we have to actually cut through in order to get into the hip joint. And that's one of the big differences between the anterior and posterior approach. And so, you know, it's just we're always trying to find a better way of doing being less invasive as we take care of these hip joints.
Now, Dr. Nuttall, does one approach provide better surgical field of vision over the other?
So I think here it's important to bring up that whichever approach is being used to do your hip replacement or your relative's hip replacement, it's very important to say that the surgeon needs to be very experienced with the approach that they are using. That probably matters much more than field of view or any of the particulars of how your surgery is being done.
Right.
However, at least theoretically determined by the barriers of what nerves and muscles you run into, the posterior approach does allow better access to the larger structures around the hip, the greater pelvis, as well as seeing a little bit farther down the line of the femur. The practical implications of that for most hip replacements are pretty minor. In order to accomplish a hip replacement, one of the philosophies that we have is independent of whether you're going from the anterior or the posterior, to minimize the amount of invasiveness that you need to achieve in order to accomplish the surgery. So though the posterior approach is what we call expansile, see more of the surrounding structures if you continue your incision farther, in all practicality, you really get the same field of view whether you're going from the anterior or posterior for most conventional hip surgeries. if there's increasing complexity, you may have to have the posterior approach as opposed to the anterior approach in order to facilitate correction or accommodation of the particulars of any given case.
Right, and I would agree with that. And, you know, the posterior approach is more extensile, meaning you can kind of do more with it. If you're, for example, doing revision surgery, which is somebody who's already had a hip replacement and they have to have another hip replacement for loosening or other kinds of problems, the posterior approach is more extensile. In standard, just primary replacement where the hip has never been operated on before, that makes very little difference. And the anterior approach has become more extensile, and they're starting to do more revisions through the anterior approach. And so they both kind of get you where you need to go.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So Dr. McClurg, another thing that I wanted to ask you is, how does each approach account for muscle and nerve preservation?
Right, so that's a good question. So there's two different sets of instruments for, you know, do these approaches. So they're very specialized, and I think that's where Dr. Natal kind of hit on the theme of it's really important to have an experienced surgeon. And so, you know, the anterior approach requires retractors, which are devices to hold the incision open while we're actually doing the hip replacement. And for a lot of anterior hip replacements, it requires a special bed so that you can get the exposure that you want versus not having to have a special bed for the posterior approach, although most hospitals have both of the beds. And so it's a difference in approach, it's a difference in exposure and use of instruments to kind of get where you want to go. And both of these approaches have been very refined over the last several decades and have become, I guess, what I would call slick approaches for getting to where we need to go.
So I'd love for each of you to talk about the post-op experience from the patient perspective. Like, what might their precautions be and how would that differ with each approach taken? Dr. Natal, we'll start with you.
Certainly. And just to clarify, now we can pick some sides as we get into this. I do tend to do many surgeries through the anterior approach, and I do them because of the recovery period. I think one of the things that has been well established with the anterior approach is that the immediate postoperative period and early recovery are a little bit easier on patients with the anterior approach. After the first few weeks, it's been well demonstrated that you get to exactly the same place with the posterior versus the anterior. But with the anterior approach and the philosophy of muscle splitting, patients do tend to get back on their feet a little bit faster on aggregate. However, there are many particulars with individual patients that probably override those specifics, and it's something that orthopedic surgeons like to talk about more than is practically applicable to the patient. The other thing that you mentioned is in terms of hip precautions. What we say with hip precautions are there are certain positions you need to avoid after any hip replacement in order to make sure that you do not put stress on the area of the capsule or the surrounding of the joint that's been repaired as we've approached the hip. The posterior approach has very established precautions in terms of not crossing the midline, not flexing greater than 90 degrees, and not turning your leg in an inwards direction or pointing your toes towards your other foot for a certain period after the surgery. The anterior approach, because we access the hip a different direction, does still have precautions, so they tend to be a little less strict in that external rotation or putting your foot away from your body can theoretically reproduce instability like the posterior approach. There is a lot of debate in the orthopedic community regarding overall stability, and I think the conclusion is that no matter what the approach, the much more significant factor is implant placement and how the implants have been positioned to ensure, one, incorporate into your body in the best way possible, and two, that they are oriented in a way that minimizes the position of instability regardless of the precautions postoperatively. And this is where new technologies like robotic guidance have really improved outcomes from orthopedic surgery, in particular hip replacements.
Right. I would agree with all of that, that, you know, there's some differences in the early postoperative period, but the implant positioning is a much more important factor. Also, there's some differences among surgeons. So, for example, for me, and we talked about this a little bit, as we cut those short little muscles right at the back of the hip, we repair them at the end. And so for about 6 weeks afterwards, we try to protect that repair until it has a chance to heal. For my patients, after that 6 weeks, they have no lifelong precaution. And that's something we used to do a lot more in the past, where we'd say these precautions that we gave you from the beginning right after surgery basically extend for the rest of your life, and we don't do that anymore. Part of that is I think we've gotten more comfortable with the approach. I think the bigger factor is as we've used new technologies like robotics to really put these implants exactly where they go, and minimize the risk of instability, that we've just taken those restrictions away and let the patient go back to a complete unrestricted lifestyle with regard to motion, moving around. Still, there's certain things we don't do, regardless of approach, anterior or posterior approach. We don't let people run on these hips. But other than that, they have very little in the way of restrictions after surgery.
So, Dr. Dutal, I'd be interested to learn a little bit more about the kind of scenarios that would cause the anterior approach to be more beneficial. You know, you kind of mentioned that recovers a little easier, maybe the precautions are a little less strict, but maybe talk a little bit about how you think about the anterior approach being more beneficial over the posterior.
Certainly. And I think that touches on a good point, that not everyone is a candidate for an anterior approach surgery. Because we are stretching muscles out of the way, the amount of tissue between the hip joint and the skin is very important. If we try to force the muscles out of the way with an undue amount of pressure, the risk of a nerve injury increases quite a bit, as well as the difficulty with actually accessing the hip joint increases exponentially after a certain point. So most surgeons who perform the anterior approach do have a weight cap. Really muscular patients, we also tend to try to steer away from. But for most average-sized people, it is a good alternative. The other one that comes up as a barrier to performing the anterior approach is if you have any significant deformity in your proximal femur in particular. It's one of those areas of the body that more variable than you'd expect from looking at people from the outside. And there are some people with natural bends, curves, and different orientations to the hip that makes the anterior approach a little bit more dangerous because we need to manipulate the femur in such a way that it does get stressed to put the implant in. Outside of that, I do most patients by default as an anterior approach. But to reiterate what we said earlier, that is very much because that is the approach that I'm familiar with, and I'm very comfortable approaching the hip in that direction. And I think that matters more than the particulars of the patient or the specifics of the surgery.
Right. And so, you know, and that's sort of the difference between anterior and posterior. The posterior approach, because it's extensile, you can do just about any patient. For anterior approach, and Dr. Dutal may want to weigh in on what percentage of patients, but most patients can be done through the anterior approach. There are some folks that they get a little bigger with their body mass index, or that are very muscular, that by stretching those muscles, you either cause injury to the nerves in the skin that cause sensation to the skin, or you risk breaking the bone, putting that much pressure on it. And so, you know, these two approaches, you know, just like everything else in life, there's risks and benefits to whatever you do in life. Sometimes you just got to pick your poison with these approaches.
I think that's very correct. And just to answer your question, I'd say about 70 to 80% of the people who come into the practice who are candidates for a hip replacement otherwise are good candidates for an anterior approach.
So Dr. McClurg, I'd like to start to close the conversation with, I suppose, a more broad question. What do you feel like the audience should know is the most important thing about hip replacement in general?
Right. So pick the right surgeon. So that's number one. Pick somebody that you can work with, somebody that you trust, somebody that has an excellent reputation. You know, volume makes a difference. So, you know, high volume surgeons have better outcomes than lower volume surgeons. And then I think Dr. Dutal would agree with this. We've talked about this before. You know, the approach, you know, like I said, it's sometimes pick your poison. There's pluses and minuses, risks and benefits to these different approaches. But we both embrace technology and see, you know, robotics is letting us put these implants in incredibly precise sort of ways that are very reproducible. And it's a more important factor than whether you have the anterior or the posterior approach.
I would absolutely second all of those points, that having comfort with your surgeon, picking a surgeon who does have a high throughput of these types of cases and is in, and if you do have a strong preference on the approach, is comfortable with the approach you've selected, as well as incorporating in the and most recent new technology that really does allow us to improve the accuracy and reliability of this otherwise great surgery.
And the final question that I always like to ask our guests is the following. You know, Dr. McClurg, just all of the experience that you have, all of the different surgeries, whether they be anterior or posterior, what's one thing that you know to be true that you wish more patients knew about before they came in for surgery or they came to see you?
Yeah, I think being an informed consumer and you know, knowing kind of what you're getting into to start with, but also once you find somebody, what I see so often is patients don't come in because they're afraid of the unknown, or they're afraid of what the doctor might say in terms of, yes, you know, you need surgery. So information is power. And so in going and pulling the trigger and having that clinical visit and then establishing a relationship with the physician and getting your question answered is the most important thing. It reduces anxiety. It takes away the unknown. It lets you establish a relationship, understand what you're dealing with, and what are the possible solutions to your problem. And so I think sometimes people stick their head in the sand. And total hip replacement has been called the operation of the century. There's nothing in medicine that offers more quality of life improvement for you and your spouse, for your work, and for your quality of life than hip replacement. And so the biggest mistake I see people making is not pulling the trigger, having the clinical visit, get the information you need to make the decision that's best for you.
I think we're preaching to the choir if they made it to the end of this podcast. So if you're one of those listeners, congratulations there. I would absolutely second that there is no time that is too early to start looking at these types of surgeries, to start looking at surgeons, and to start getting your questions answered. When patients come into my office, I hope that they know that they can really ask anything to make sure that they are comfortable, because at the end of the day, the service is about the patients and not about us.
Couldn't agree more. Exactly.
Well, Dr. Natal and Dr. McClurg, thank you so much for your time today. I truly appreciate it.
Super, my pleasure. Great. Thank you.
That was Dr. James Natal and Dr. Joel McClurg, orthopedic surgeons for Reed Health. Thanks for checking out this episode of Right Beside You. To learn more, you can head to reedhealth.org/ortho. And that concludes this episode of Right Beside You, a Reed Health podcast. If you found this podcast to be helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for topics of interest to you. I'm Prakash Chandran. Thank you so much again for listening. Be well.